Well, hello, hello, Sweet Nation. A happy Monday morning to you, because no one ever says that. You're listening to the Soccer Central Podcast, or as it will be referred to on Twitter, 300 times in the next 12 hours. Thomas Dobby recaps the weekend in the Premier League. Thomas Dobby.
Or D-Bag FC.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right, man. What's going on?
I'm doing well. What is Charmin's reason for leaving us alone this week?
Where did he go? Where is he?
Oh, he's on vacation?
I guess so.
I didn't think dads go on vacation anymore.
That's basically what I guessed that he said, right? Mm-hmm. Was that he's going to be gone for 2 weeks. And
2 weeks?
Well, he said he won't be here next week
either. Oh, boy.
So I think he is actually on vacation.
Well, please don't unsubscribe from the podcast because we make millions based off your subscription, we being the station. So keep listening. Thomas Dobby and I will do our best, as we're regularly applauded by, I think, Kelly Marr and someone else, Young Jesus or whoever it is that
one other listener
occasionally tweets and says that when Charmin's away, we're so much more focused. The football chat is considerably better.
Well, we'll do our best to...
Not my words. This is the words of someone else claiming to be a listener not related to either of us.
We'll do our best to steer away from that today, then.
Okay.
Go all over the map.
Let's begin Thomas Dobby recaps the Premier League weekend that was with a match that I would love to get back as far as time is concerned.
Boy.
My God.
Yeah.
London Derby, Arsenal 0, Chelsea 1. Title challengers? Not after that. Not to me.
No.
Like, that match was... crazy useless.
It was,
wasn't it?
You know, as soon as Costa scored, you worried that it was going to devolve into what it did because, you know, it was set up nicely and leading up. I was stunned how Arsenal were such small favorites. Mm-hmm. In fact, they were getting plus money and I was like, this is strange. Arsenal are miles better than Chelsea this year.
What were they getting, a nickel?
They were getting like...
had to be close.
Plus 115.
What?
By the time kickoff rolled around with Sanchez not in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking, they're 19 points up on Chelsea. I know they never beat them, but this is the opportunity for Arsenal. This is the time
this
that they are going to step up. And then as soon as, you know, Mertesacker gets the red card, you think, uh-oh. And that span of 5 minutes was pretty amazing to watch, really, from the red card to pulling Giroud off for Gabriel and then... Costa scoring in front of Gabriel, who he'd enticed into a red card in a reverse fixture earlier this year. Just that 5 minutes for Arsenal fans must have just been like, here we go again. I mean, if they can't win the title this season when it's this wide open and teams around them keep dropping points, and Man City go out on Saturday and drop points to West Ham, what an opportunity. And they go out in that 5 minutes and they couldn't recover. I mean, they played pretty well with 10 men, but Chelsea had a perfect game plan after that. And they totally stifled them, and God, you just, as an Arsenal fan, they must just be going nuts right now. Like their heads have to explode.
I couldn't imagine. And there's so many people in the camp. We've been on the bus and got off it a few times, at least I have, that the Wenger's past his, you know, best before date, and he should have left years ago, and he can't take the team over the top. And I know there's Arsenal fans who always back the manager and avoid that bus every time it goes by. But when you saw that match, it had to make you think, my God, this is they'll never have a better chance of winning the Premier League title. And Chelsea will never be more out of it than they are right now, out of the race. And they can't find the gall to compete in a match like that. I mean, I understand being down a man, but they were lifeless.
There
was no urgency, no ability to create. And I mentioned Wenger because that's where I put my criticism. They didn't lose that match when Mertesacker got sent off. They didn't lose that match because of the goal. They lost the match the second he sacrificed Olivier Giroud.
Yeah.
How do you decide to take your best goal scorer all season long, one of the most on-form men around right now, who I still don't think he actually rates as highly as he should, put on a defender and commit that early in the match? You're hoping for a counter opportunity.
Or a counter or for a 0-0 and take a point.
All Goose had to say at halftime was, I can't do a Dutch accent without impersonating our good friend Thomas Rongen, but along the lines of, hey, guys, just don't walk with beyond your three-step radius, and you'll be fine. They'll beat themselves.
Yeah.
My God.
No, it was incredibly negative, and you know, obviously the reaction from the Emirates was said it all, and just, again, like it snowballed into... right away, the goal happens, and Chelsea just have the knack of beating Arsenal. I think Arsenal haven't scored against them in 6 matches now.
Yeah.
Which is pretty insane.
I think they mentioned it in minutes and it made it sound more emphatic.
500 and something. So, yeah, I mean, just one of those that, again, we're going to look back on with Arsenal. There's been so many of them lately where if they had just put together a run, they could be running away with this title. And that goes for every team. I don't want to just harp on them completely, but it really is stunning. And
but it's them who have sniffed and been so close, and we said, you know, oh, they're just, you know, one player away, or they're just a bit of luck away, you know, a stroke of luck that they always seem denied. But you look at the squad that, you know, Wenger had. Obviously, Sanchez not 100%, but still at least in the side. I don't understand how you can't compete with Chelsea, this Chelsea, right now.
Yeah. And this Chelsea are playing a bit better, and this Chelsea were up for this game, obviously, but you're at home. You have to have the incentive. And again, the red card does change everything, but, you know, putting yourself in that position, I don't know what he was thinking on that tackle and say, oh, well, maybe he didn't make contact. It doesn't matter. The referee has no choice. You're the last man. You go flying in like that.
Panic.
You didn't look back. Complete panic. Complete panic.
That's the thing. I know it sounds bold, but, and I actually hate to make comments of such magnitude, but I don't think they have the mental fortitude to be champions.
No, because you can we've
look,
said that
you
for
can,
a long
You can look
time.
At that. It starts with Wenger, as I mentioned, not recognizing that taking Giroud off wasn't the smartest move for securing a point and or creating goals. Mertesacker's decision and his absolute panic. And then Lauren Koscielny's audition to be in Nashville for the NHL All-Star Game when he threw his body through Cesc Fabregas. I mean, how, like, Mark Clattenburg might as well have said, you get shots, Fab. You ain't getting nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how that wasn't a penalty.
Yeah, it was kind of insane.
And I understand that, you know, Wenger fears that scoreline, Arsenal 1, Chelsea 3. If they really go for it, if they open up and stretch themselves already a man down, I get that. But I think it's worse to come on today and talk about that match that we just saw.
Sure, there was nothing of positivity or nothing of note for them. And you know, I did see a few places, oh, Arsenal played well with 10 men. Well, you know what? They put themselves in that situation, and really, it doesn't matter. And now, again, you miss that chance. And I know we're harping on them, and they're tied with Man City and 3 points back of Leicester, but you just keep thinking that Man City are going to make that run and be able to have that consistent form at some point to string together, where you don't want to be chasing them and you want to be above them. You want them chasing you. And the team with the most mental fortitude right now looks like it's Leicester.
Yeah. Which is shocking.
It's honestly like that is the team that looks the most like they have the most balls, for lack of a better term.
It's a great term. I don't know if our technician Lance Kennedy is going to censor that. Oh, he's giving us the wave.
It's
Yeah. Male body parts work. Shall we move to Leicester then? Because I think it's good that we go from negativity to positivity to back to negativity. We can, you can wait. Leicester 3, Stoke 0. You talk about them having the fortitude. And I think we spoke about it last week. Watching them struggle to score, or more so this shift in an acceptance of understanding their league position and how much they have to risk. And not taking risks on the pitch like they were before, not playing that swashbuckling Foxes football that everyone began to love through 20 matches. I didn't think that they were going to put up multiple goals in the game. But against a team like Stoke, who don't concede very much and can make it tough for you to run through them like that, I thought that was an absolutely great result. And Ranieri, you know, was trying to be coy about it, not too direct, but it was definitely a message to the fans. Hey, why don't we all just dream a little bit?
Yeah.
And they should.
And how can you not? I mean, every week as this has gone on for the last, you know, I'd say 2 months early in the season, oh, it was a nice story. And then we just kept thinking, well, now they're getting closer and closer to, you know, really being in that top four race. And they've got a real shot at the Champions League. And it's a nice story. And they're going to fall off. But as it gets here, we have 15 matches to go.
Crazy.
And they're extending their lead this weekend.
10
you know,
points
they
up on
put out the barrier
United.
In the first match of the three, and I'd say with Spurs, four title contenders.
Yeah.
They go out and win, and then Man City can't go out and match it, and Arsenal go out and lose, and they pick up these points, and all of a sudden you're looking at it, and, you know, what's it going to take to win the title this season? I tweeted this yesterday. I mean, it could be 78 points.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at Man City, who, let's say, are the favorites still, which I think is kind of accepted. So 15 matches left.
They are in my eyes.
So let's say Man City go on a nice run and win. Let's say they win 11, lose 2, and draw 2 of their last 15. That's 35 points. That would only get them to 79. 79.
I know.
Leicester on 47. So with their 15 matches, if they're able to win 10 and draw 2 and lose 3, which is possible. They've only lost 2 all season.
Mm-hmm.
They can match that 79 with 10 wins, 3 draws, 2 losses.
Insane. Absolutely insane. I mean, they need to look at this last stretch, this final 15, as securing the top 4. And I think they already, based on their play, you know, ahead of
a 10-point gap
against Stoke, already
10-point gap
them.
On Man United.
I mean, it's unbelievable that they're in this position. And
I think everyone wants to see it. Unless you're a fan of one of those teams that's chasing, how can you not love this? It is exactly what the Premier League needed. You know, it's cliche, a breath of fresh air, this and that. But to have a team like this actually be in the title race.
Yeah.
And now there's an FA Cup week, so they don't play again in the league for a week and change. They have midweek matches like into February. Obviously, you know, big ones coming up. Again, but we've said this before over the holiday period, they had this test. But now, again, the next 3 matches are, it's amazing. They host Liverpool, and they go to Man City, and they go to Arsenal.
Wow.
So, I mean, team Liverpool, they got beat, but they're home to them. And then they play the 2 teams that are right there with them.
Sure.
Obviously, Spurs is well involved. And Spurs play Man City the week that they play Arsenal. So the next 2 weekends of Premier League football, which is February 6th and February 13th weekends, we have clashes of the top 4 teams all playing each other. It's just, and Leicester are one of them.
But the likelihood of them picking up points in all 3 matches is very high.
If they can try, if
shocking.
They can find a draw at Man City and Arsenal, draw
they,
those.
If they get points in 2 of those 3 matches, come away with 4, they're still in a phenomenal position.
Absolutely. And then they follow up home to Norwich, home to West Brom, at Watford, home to Newcastle.
Unbelievable.
Those are all winnable matches for them.
And you talk about, you know, anyone who's not a fan of a top 4 chasing team has to be happy seeing Leicester. And as we are, our teams couldn't be farther out of it. And you look at this season when, you know, the English Premier League, and I say that because obviously it's the global game and it's driven by global money. And teams like Leicester and Villa and Sunderland don't get much play beyond England. But this is still England's game. And having Leicester in the mix and playing in Europe in a season where you're going to lose the team in Birmingham and potentially both teams in the Northeast,
that is.
I don't think you could have a worse scenario with those 3 going down as far as the English game is concerned.
Yeah.
The top flight. Those
You're
are
right.
Two, those are 3 massive markets, 2 massive regions for football. It would be a real shame.
Well-supported clubs, yeah. No, it's true. Looking down there, it's not ideal. It's scary. And
I think
we've had this conversation
scary.
A lot of times, how tough it is to get back up. I mean, I can speak to that pretty, you know, first person about Sheffield United still toiling away in League One after a second relegation. It's not easy. It's very difficult. So you will have a couple of big teams coming up, potentially. Middlesbrough's top of the league right now, even though they lost on the weekend, which is also another of those Northeast clubs that is a big market and a big fan base that will be nice. But yeah, we could lose some big boys this year.
But think about it. If the Blades were in the Premier League, you know, those trips to Wembley, less and less likely. At least you can kind of circle the calendar. Well, playoff final is going to be May 2-4 weekend.
Let's hope.
No Indy 500 trips. Let's. We might go to London.
I'm going to France this summer, so no playoff final, even if they make it.
I think we've had this discussion. Did we have it on the air last week about, did you get match tickets? You bought.
I don't know if we had it on the air. I don't think so. I have 2
tickets.
Well,
now that it's out there.
I have 2 matches right now.
Okay.
Sweden, Ireland, and Paris on the 13th, and Ukraine, Northern Ireland on the 16th in Lyon.
That'd be amazing.
I'm still hoping for some more in this second draw lottery thingy that UEFA put out, so I've applied, and we'll see.
If you know the right people, you're getting tickets, so that's great. Shall we go to Manchester United, who can't get goals, nor points, nor positive performances?
Sure we can.
Wow. Something very entertaining seeing that A, Charlie Austin still got it. B, he was the only person on the score sheet. and see United lose again to a Southampton team who, like, really were the definition of, you know, let's just try and get something on the counter. Let's just try and play positive and protect ourselves. We don't give up too many opportunities, and we'll be okay.
That's the thing against Man United right now. If you just don't give them those chances or make mistakes, they're not going to break you down. They're not going to create. So
just
you
play
to,
smart.
I mean, again, Sheffield United did it against them in the FA Cup, and it wasn't even that difficult for a League One team.
Nope.
Just sat back, defended, let them come at you, and they can't create. They can't break you down. They can't break down a League One team. So they're not going to break down a Premier League team. They could have played 900 minutes there and not scored, seemingly. Like, it was dour.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they got beat on the counter. Tough on them. They probably shouldn't have lost it. It probably should have been 0-0. Mm. But that's what happens when you can't do it. And the fans are more and more boisterous. The fans are turning more and more. And we see it every week at halftime. They're getting booed off already.
Yeah.
Van Hall, they're glory, glory Man United's pumping through Old Trafford. And the fans are just so dejected. I mean, for a team and a fan base that's been so spoiled for so long, the last couple of seasons, and right now it's just, I can't see him surviving the week. I really can't. I'd be surprised.
A couple things. The story today is that Van Hall admits he can't fulfill United's expectations, which, you know, be it words from the horse's mouth, I don't know, but not a headline that you see from other managers of his stature, being his resume and the club that he's at right now. And I feel like time and time again, you keep seeing that. Too much honesty, too much candidness when it comes to Van Hal's insecurities, which
says
to me,
he's failing the fans.
Right, which to me is just weird. Like, even though, like, that's the reality, and even though you're being told that constantly, it's one of those things. Is it not just one of those things you don't admit to? It's just one of those things that you don't even acknowledge. You mask with either other arguments, or you mask with what you're doing on the pitch. Right now, they can't do anything. If only they had Angel Di Maria. Did you see the goal he scored for PSG the weekend?
Oh, it was incredible.
Boy, crazy.
Scored a couple
nothing.
Of nice ones, but that, oof, almost a goal the weekend after Dele Alli.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, Dele, I would tell you, England's going to be in good shape. You're going to have a lot of fun.
2020.
In you're going to have a lot of fun. Oh, I was talking about 2028, I think, but.
Yeah. Apparently Van Hal flew back to Holland, too. Did you see that? They canceled training Sunday and Monday. And
didn't see
he's
that.
Flown back, who knows for what, but yeah. His daughter's birthday. There you go.
Oh, I was going to say maybe the NAC Breda job. I'm trying to think of the most random club in Holland. I think that's definitely one of them. He, you know, after the game, we listen to him talk, and he's praising Koeman's five men at the back, saying, you know, well, it was so difficult for my team when, you know, they play with five established players at the back who are very good in their positions. What are you doing? You had one shot on target. That's unacceptable. Again, when you're United, no matter the opposition, that's absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah.
And you talk about the fans booing at halftime. It's because they know their top four dreams are gone, right?
I don't know if, A, their dreams are of top four, but, B, that they're done. I mean, they're 5 points back of Spurs. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult, and they're going to have to put a run together somehow. The one thing that they have going for them is they're very good defensively. Mm-hmm. If they can just find some creativity and find some goals, I mean, there's enough time where they still could finish top four, but it's just the nature of the games, right? This used to be a team that was fun to watch and exciting and obviously winning titles and challenging for titles even when they weren't winning them. And now it's, you know, the goal is top four and you're getting past. And I think that it has a lot to do with the fact that Man City have overtaken them as the best team in the city. And it's not even close right now, and Man City are gonna be playing, you know, Champions League night still, and Man United are gonna be
playing Europa League nights,
you know,
at best.
Yeah, not a good time for them, but I don't think too many of us neutrals or fans of other clubs feel too bad for them after the last 20 years of success.
Absolutely. I do feel bad for Wayne Rooney's latest offspring, though, growing up with the name Kit.
Kit.
Like, really? Why didn't you just call him Boots? You couldn't think of anything else?
Kit bag. He, honestly, just I guess named Trudy him something that he sees good. All the time, you know? I spy Kit.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's exactly.
Yeah.
How do you name your kids? I don't know. What's in the room here? My kit bag.
Oh, God.
Haven't spoken about City. I feel like that's as good a transition as any. That was a great game at West Ham. I mean, The Hammers couldn't have had a better start to that, but they always needed to be the team to set the tone anyway. And this season, and being a fan of another team that wears claret and blue, and you just wish they would play not just big teams, but any team with as much swagger and confidence as the Hammers do. They were full value for a point. I mean, you knew that Man City had it in them to get the point and near the end grab a winner. But good on West Ham again.
Yeah, again. And I think they mentioned it on the broadcast, and it's going to happen more and more. This is kind of the, you know, the swan song to Upton Park, and they're going to want to go out with a bang there. And this is a team that really in West Ham has absolutely nothing to lose the rest of the season. They're going to finish top half. Last year, their second half just went in the tank, and
right.
They almost got dragged into a relegation fight after a great start, and that, you know, pretty much created the job loss and the opportunity for Slaven Bilic. And here's a team that, again, is possibly going to get in a European spot and maybe a Europa League spot and can play with that free-flowingness at home and just go for it and not care, and the fans are going to be rocking. So it's going to be great to watch their last few home games there. And, you know, they showed it, and they just kind of go for it and exposing Man City's absolutely horrific center-back pairing when there isn't Vincent Kompany in there. I mean, Otamendi is the most expensive center-back in the Premier League. And he's shocking.
Yeah.
That second goal, I mean, just falling asleep. It takes a bloody throw-in directly over his head.
Yeah.
And he scored from nothing. I mean, it's got to be so frustrating for City's creative players and Joe Hart and these guys who are sitting here thinking, God, can we just, this is schoolboy stuff. You just have to stop these very simple route one things and we'd be winning these games instead of needing Aguero to bail us out and draw 2-2 and get a point. And that's the one thing that could keep them from this title. If they could just defend a little bit better in the middle, they'd be there.
But this is the match that has ownership, you know, smiling in the corner, grinning, because this is the match that they trump out to the supporters when they fire Pellegrini at the end of the season and say, well, we're just not good enough to get over the top, and here are the reasons why. And remember that trip to London? Ooh, how close it was. I say that because, and speaking in past tense, because I do think they're going to win the Premier League title. I think, as we spoke about, the other teams just don't seem to have it in them to run out the rest of the season. I mean, we're only 15 matches away, and I just feel like it's City's title to lose, even though they're not in the driver's seat. And you haven't said that about them before, really.
Yeah, and the thing is for them, too, is that they host all of the three other title contenders the rest of the season. They've already gone away to Arsenal, Leicester, and Tottenham, and they still get to play all three of them at home. And we talked about that stretch to February 16th and 13th weekends, the next two weekends of Premier League action, and they host Leicester and Tottenham, and they host Arsenal late in the season. So that kind of bodes well for them. We know how much better they are at home, and to be able to host those teams right around you, that's massive for them. So I think, you know, fixture list-wise and everything, that goes for them and kind of points towards them the most, but we'll see. You still got to get the job done. And again, their inconsistency. It's a game that you kind of have to win. Couldn't do it.
If you told me in October, maybe September, but I think in October, that 23 matches in, Spurs would be 2 points back of City, five off the top, but 2 points back of, I say, the driver's seat title favorites, Manchester City, I would have told you you're listening to the wrong podcast, because there's no way Spurs would have been in that position.
Yeah, and you know what?
They keep doing it.
Again, it's another team that, as a neutral, you want to see do well, A, because of all the English players, personally.
Of course,
you know,
yeah.
Selfishly. Yeah. But
come
they're
on,
just,
LA.
They're fun to watch. They're exciting to watch, and it's some fresh blood in there, and you just, it was a nice win for them after being down. But I just worry about over the long haul if they can put together enough results in a row.
Yeah,
I still think that there's not quite the finished product to be a title-winning team, but they're in it. It was a great weekend for them when you look at all the results. I mean, obviously, other than Leicester winning, but they're right there and 2 points away from Arsenal, Man City. I mean, they have a huge opportunity to pull themselves into this. And the way that they play, I mean, the belief in the team and the midfield is so good. And they just create a ton of chances. And Dele Alli, again, you can't just say enough about that goal. It's amazing.
Do you think that he's, because of that goal, he's now move past the conversation of, well, raw talent, but we don't think that he's ready to consistently play at that level I'm not talking internationals, but just, you know, to have a place in a squad that's contending for the top four. He's the first guy, second guy perhaps, but
on the team sheet right now,
is he not?
Yeah, I mean, you can't take him out of there, and I think they'll even admit how surprised they are of how quickly he's blossomed into this. I mean, he was playing at MK Dons last season, and, you know, a League One guy. He was too good for that league, and, you know, he's young, but I don't think anybody, even at the club, would have expected that he'd, you know, be able to burst onto the scene this quickly and be this consistently good. And that's what's so exciting. It kind of reminds me, in a sense, of Raheem Sterling in that way, where he kind of breaks through at such a young age, and English player, and just, you know, oh, he's bubbling, and that quickly, he's that good, and able to, you know, change a game on his own and have that confidence. And he reminds me a lot of Sterling in that sense. You know, similar players in a way. I think that Ali is a bit more well-rounded even, and can do a bit more on the pitch, where Sterling is a great player at what he does, but I feel like Ali maybe is somebody you build around as a centerpiece even more. So it's crazy exciting for England fans.
But you talk about his character, and I think you were kind of hinting and alluding to his maturity. When the Barcelona rumors start in the summer, throw that all out the window.
Yeah,
see what happens.
I know. That is the scary thing for these young English players. But
when the headline is Dele Alli leaves his Maserati in a pregnant woman's parking spot, then you know he's going to be great for England. he's going to be great. They're not going to win Euro 2016 anyway. But like Spurs, England are a better side with him in it now. And I wouldn't have said that a few weeks ago.
No,
and I'm not just saying that because of this goal, but I think, I mean, he's showing that he has a ton of quality, and I think he's absolutely deserving of the plaudits he's getting right now. And Spurs have been fun to watch. And I remember saying on this podcast, sitting in that chair across from where I'm sitting now, saying Spurs were one of the most, you know, unappealing teams to watch, and they were to start the season, but now they're great. And if there was any doubt Palace need a goal scorer?
Yeah.
Open up the checkbook.
Yeah, they finally got one goal. But
Adebayor, 100,000
a week? They played above their heads early in the season, but now you kind of see them slinking down, and you kind of worry that it might, you know, devolve into a 12th, 13th place finish, even if they keep sliding. And, you know, you don't want to be going that way when the season ends. Although, it turned around for West Ham this year pretty quickly, but that was with a manager change. I think Pardew's done a good job, but, you know, the expectations change so much when you're up there, because it was kind of them and West Ham being the other huge stories of the season, along with obviously Leicester being the main one. And now Palace, as they kind of slip. At the end of the day, if you're finishing 11th, 12th, it's kind of where you expected. So, you know, the shine is coming off a little bit. They're down to 11th. You know, it's.
So I don't adjust your expectations when you're in that level. I think Pardew thought, okay, we're playing at this level. We're absolutely top 16, top 8 at worst, you know, contending, taking points off the big teams, and taking points off the teams in front of us. You know, when you start that hot, it's hard to readjust. Exactly why Alex Pato thinks he's a great fit for Chelsea.
Oh God,
we skipped over that when we spoke about Chelsea. How on earth? I mean, he has the best PR team in the world, General Motors. This is the guy you need to hire to get back into the good books of the world. But. Who thinks that's a good idea?
I have no idea what is going on.
Who
there?
Thinks that's a good idea?
Is it for training purposes?
He scored 3 goals in 20 matches in Brazil. God. He's on loan at Sao Paulo because he wasn't performing for whoever owns him, Corinthians, I think. I mean, I wouldn't touch him with your NASL team.
Did he write a love letter to Chelsea and get them to come?
How did we skip that too? You know, you listen to too much Drake when you write a love letter to the company you've dreamed of working for. Jose Mourinho. Do you miss him yet?
Not really, but I will by the summer. I'll want him back.
Yeah.
He's just fun to talk about. And, you know, it was fun to see him go into the tank a little bit and see Chelsea do that. But it's a more exciting league and more exciting world when Jose Mourinho is front and center, and I'm sure he'll be back in the limelight somewhere in the next 12 months.
It took a little over a year, I think, before people really started to miss him when he left Chelsea the first time. And then when he took the job at Real Madrid, you get to see him more, just the prominence of where he is and when he's speaking, and the opportunity to speak in English, I think, a little bit more. But when he came back to the Premier League and we were, working on Fox Soccer News at the time, we were absolutely thrilled because from a fan perspective, it's amazing. From a television producing perspective, it's amazing. And I really hope that he takes one of the available Premier League jobs and doesn't go to PSG or Qatar or Zenit or somewhere like that that would, you know, throw him money and let him kind of sit, you know, outside of the spotlight a bit.
Be amazing if he went to Man United. Just
yeah, I think so too. With
can
with
you
Pep
imagine a Premier League next year? Exactly, Pep at Man City, Mourinho at Man United, Wenger at Arsenal. Oh my God,
it's a dream, isn't it?
It's a dream, and Klopp at Liverpool. All of that.
Yeah,
I mean that's
absolutely, and the elevation of that rivalry, you know, which has come so far so quickly, obviously with Man City's increase in pedigree and increase in revenue, but I can't think of a better scenario for the two of them. Again, especially when you're talking about, you know, a country that's going to lose potentially three big market teams. That would be great. That would that wouldn't take away from those regions, I think, losing their top flight football, but that's that would absolutely be great from the fan perspective. Since I just mentioned the Northeast, Newcastle, tough loss at Watford. Watford just keep doing it.
Yeah, they needed that win, actually, Watford. They'd kind of fallen off a little bit, so that was good to kind of steady them. We haven't talked about the 5-4 game on Saturday morning that I slept through either.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why I've slept through this podcast, not talking about it. I'll take 9-goal games every day.
I'm so mad at myself. I was going to get up for it, and then I was like, Saturday morning. I don't know. Well, I was like, you know, it's Saturday morning. I sleep in a bit, and then I did, to be fair, wake up at 4-3 and see the end, which was nice, but I think I tweeted it. I watched Man United Southampton the first 45 minutes. I almost fell asleep during it, and I didn't get up for that 9-goal thriller. So disappointing.
There's one station in this country that we reside in that when a match ends, they put the match up on demand on the app to be watched whenever you want. Mm. There's another station that puts it up 4 days later.
Mm.
So I didn't get to watch it in its entirety either, as I had hoped to when I woke up at 10 o'clock to watch Villa struggle.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Defensive plays overrated. Just let us have those.
Yeah, Russell Martin, your boy from the quiz. You know, lovely back pass there. It was good.
Yeah, it was good.
I haven't seen such an error from a Russell Martin since he threw it off the bat in game five of the ALDS there.
Hey-o. Pitchers and catchers reporting in how many weeks?
Oh, my God. Huh? I'm so excited.
It's around the corner.
Like 3 weeks, yeah.
How many flex packs have you bought with your employee discount?
Yeah? A bunch.
Everyone get them for Christmas gifts, I'm sure?
No, not that generous. Only get 100 tickets, so.
Only 100?
Yeah.
Oh,
I used them all last year.
I could see that.
Yeah. It happens quickly when you go with like a group of 10 or 15 for one game.
Well, stop hanging out with your giant entourage. Do you have your own personal chef too? Are you John Joe Shelby?
The Tim and Sid team had a couple of nights out at the Jays game, okay?
So you treat the boys? That
not treat them,
fair.
They pay, but I use my tickets.
That's unfortunate. Anything more about Liverpool? I feel like...
I mean, nice win, exciting, but just, you know, showing how much of a work in progress it is for Klopp.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take some time, and they're fun.
Yep.
They're definitely fun, and... you know, Firmino's coming into his own quite a bit. I really like how he's developed, and I think that he could be a big piece going forward, which I would not have thought that 3 months ago when he was a fringe player. And I think that Klopp's impact on a guy like that has been, you know, easy for all to see. He's got to sort out the defense. He's got to get in a couple of proper center backs and you know, proper players to anchor that down, which he knows that and they know that. And I don't think that they're going to rush to do it in January because I feel like this season is kind of, you know, work in progress and finish 7th or 8th okay, and then next year they have to really go after top 4, and I think that that's kind of the expectation. So the rest of the season is, hey, if we can win, you know, the League Cup, which they have a 1-0 lead going home to Stoke for the second leg this week, should get to the final against either Everton or Man City, you know, try to win that, and, you know, maybe a couple rounds in the FA Cup and go from there and kind of build that belief. And you can see this togetherness and how much the team was, you know, pumped up by that win and loved the manager and he broke his glasses. I mean, those are the kind of moments that will help, but the fact that it was in a 5-4 against Norwich is different from what you want in the long run.
There was a time when I wouldn't be able to say this without being violently attacked on Twitter, but I didn't watch any Hoffenheim games to know who Firmino was. My introduction to him was at Copa America in Brazil, Colombia. And a combination of my poor vision, at how low I was to the pitch, and the fact that he was wearing identical boots to Neymar, there's quite a few times where I confused the two of them. And Firmino, you could tell he had, certainly not at Neymar's level, but that kind of level of flair, that eye-catchingness, and that a bit more quality than every defender standing in front of him, that he had a lot of skill and was, you know, could unleash, I think, at any moment if you were unlucky enough as a defense to be in front of him. And he's starting to, you know, settle into his own at Liverpool. They'll be better for it. He's been a good player to watch. One tweet, since we're still in Liverpool, José, or Babeush, as he tweeted, give Sturridge one last chance between now and summer, or cut our losses if he can't be back by then, ? Who was rumored to have? West Ham, was it?
Jeez.
He's rumored to go somewhere.
That would be ridiculous.
Why would you take the risk? But at the same time, it's like, if you're Liverpool, you know what he can do when he's out there.
Fantastic talent.
How do
talent.
You decide
just
to pull the plug?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I don't think you can, but, you know, one of those guys where injuries just continue to plague him and can he get consistent games and worry about the character a little bit. I don't want to say that because I do like him and we don't really know what's going on there, but, you know, there's been problems with some managers and the questions of, you know, if he's trying to come back and then the whole England thing, but I think he wanted to play and, you know, Brendan Rodgers and Roy Hodgson having a bit of a thing over him. I don't know. I think that it would be tough to give up on him because I think he's probably their most talented striker. I mean, Coutinho's probably a more talented player, but a guy that can be a huge linchpin for you and a huge part of your squad going forward. I don't think you can cut ties with him.
For a second, and I was distracted by the sidebar of my Twitter here. It sounded like you were talking about Steven Stamkos for a minute. Interesting comparison that I didn't think I'd make on this podcast, but when Sharma's not here, things go differently. Any other more tweets to
get to? We got a few other. Tiger Sammy, who's a good buddy on Twitter there, just asking if Charlie Austin is the bargain of the transfer window. I think it'd be tough to argue so far. I mean, £4 million. Already paid that off basically for that win at Man United.
I think the idea of, you know, him being a £10 million front man isn't that crazy to begin with. We look at, you know, recently who teams have paid 10 mil for.
And that might happen this summer too, right? Because he's out of contract, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know if you can quantify winning back-to-back games at Old Trafford for the first time in 50 years, but if you could put a money value on it, it's probably surpassing the $4 million that it cost them. So good on them. I think Newcastle and Villa and any team that balked at the price tag for him in the summer will absolutely grow to regret it if they didn't already after one match. I thought it was pretty good. I'll talk Villa for a second because I joined the Toronto Supporters Club of Aston Villa for the first time all season. Most complete game they've played. Inspiring that they played like that on the road. But they just don't know how to put all those attempts on target. And you just felt like, I mean, watching it, it's like, okay, this is good. You're moving it forward. You're putting it near the net. They haven't looked like this all season. West Brom looked like Villa all year.
It's getting better, right?
It's getting
better and they're getting points, but they're just running out of time.
They're running out of time.
Draws aren't going to work. I mean,
You're probably
going to need, Norwich is 23 points in 23 matches. So say it takes 38. It usually doesn't take 40 anymore, but say it takes 38. You need 25 points in your last 15. Right? I mean,
quite steep.
It's quite steep. You need 7 wins, 4 draws, and 4 losses. Like, that is going to be a massive turnaround. It's going to be tough.
If Tony Pulis doesn't get them to turn around from how they played against Villa, I think West Brom might find themselves sliding back into that relegation.
Yeah, they're one of them in the mix, right, aren't they? I mean, I think you can basically say it's from 14 down, from West Brom down, are the ones who are in that. You know, Chelsea, obviously, not Everton, although they're beaten again at home, and
I think
they're going to be fine. Palace is one that we did just mention that could slide down in there if they're not careful. I think they've done enough already and probably only need, again, they have 31, only 7 more points. should be okay. I think they will slip a bit, but it's basically from 14 down. You know, West Brom, Swansea, Bournemouth, Norwich that are all looking over their shoulders at the bottom three right now.
Do you think Bobby Martinez and Tim Howard are looking over their shoulders? Because Toffees fans chanting Martinez and Howard out after Everton won Swansea 2.
Yeah, it's tough times for Martinez.
I mean, isn't it?
Six wins this season. 11 draws, only 6 losses, but
I think it's one win in six.
Yeah, it's been really poor.
Howard hasn't looked like his old self. He's looked a lot more Brad Guzan like lately, sadly. Because I think he is one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. At least he has been in recent years. Not showing it right now, and Everton paying the price for it in that mediocrity zone there, you know. Next to Chelsea and West Brom within a point.
Yeah. Taking a 2-1 lead to Man City in the Capital One Cup tomorrow.
Yeah.
The second leg. That should be interesting. That should be a good game.
I think the only match we skipped over is Sunderland's 1-1 draw with Bournemouth. Am I right?
Yeah, which is fine.
Okay. We're just about that time where you head off to your meeting with the faces of the network. What's on the agenda today? Probably the other football.
Lots of the other football. Yeah,
happy for your old boy.
Absolutely,
Peyton Manning?
I'm thrilled.
Could be happy.
Yeah, oh, so happy. I mean, as a Colts fan, obviously still a fan of Peyton Manning, and also just can't stand the Patriots and Tom Brady.
I was going to say that, and the fact that you get to walk in here on Monday and your boss being an obnoxious Patriots fan, that's got to help.
Yeah, I don't have to deal with 2 weeks of hype around Tom Brady. I respect the guy; he's done great, and he is definitely in the conversation, if not the greatest of all time, but I couldn't handle 2 weeks of Patriots love again.
Oh,
so,
the idea of Roger Goodell potentially having to hand the trophy over to Brady. I mean, talk about awkward.
Yeah, you know? And Robert Kraft. Yeah,
like divorced parents in a room for the first time.
It's gonna be a good Super Bowl. I'm pumped about it. Yeah,
yeah, it'll be good.
Newton against Manning. That's
I think
great matchup.
There was it took me quite a few years before I had any respect, I think, for Cam Newton. He, you know, great talent you could spot, but I just didn't like his aura. I just didn't like seeing him succeed. But now I can't turn him off when he's playing.
Yeah.
Well, that caused a few unsubscriptions, I think, particularly from James Sharman. Shall we leave that as our bits and bobs?
Sure.
I don't think I have anything else. Unless you have any Oscar conversations. When is that, by the way?
The Oscars are February 28th.
Can you please designate your evening to live tweet?
I will. And the Grammys are February 15th on a Monday, so I might do that as well.
Not as big into the music. We did a bit on Nashville. They're hosting the NHL All-Star Game, of course, and someone was featured, a 20-time Grammy winner, who is... So, oh, man, I love ice hockey. I couldn't believe that I was, you know, now I'm playing next to Alice Cooper at the
Gaylord
Arena.
No idea who they were.
Yeah. Who is this guy? Yeah. So, to me, the Grammys have lost a lot of gusto. I know country music's a big deal. Not to take away from your 20 Grammys, that is incredibly impressive. But I only care that you live tweet the Oscars to me. Things of relevance.
We'll get it done.
With that, cheers for listening.